Looking for strategies to help you protect your portfolio in these uncertain times? Visit robblack.com. robblack.com, powered by EP Wealth.
Let's talk money, financial planning, wealth preservation, bonds, bad markets, good markets, beating the market, underperforming the market, what it's all about to you. Let's hit that. The jobs report that came out on Friday was very Goldilocksian, which is what Wall Street tends to like. Things not to be too hot, not to be too cold, kind of a cool temper to it. And a lot of good things can happen when you don't go to extremes. Now, again, that's a very general statement, so don't take it out of context. Big event coming up this Thursday, this week, probably going to be the only one to two events that I do in the South Bay for the rest of the year, definitely in Palo Alto. You can find out more information at Rob Black Show. It's Thursday, May 9th. So it's coming up 6:30 to 8:30 at the Palo Alto Elks Lodge. It's on El Camino. It's really easy to get to. And there's food that you can grab before the event. And there's food that you can grab after the event at restaurants close by. So it's super convenient for all. CFP Chad Birkin will be there talking wealth preservation, retirement planning. Chad, this is a great event for people like me who are in our 50s plus, who have 500,000 plus, who are heading towards retirement with a good idea, but not necessarily the most refined ideas. Is that a fair thing to say that I need some refinement, or I need some more smarts, or I need some more CI, Chad intelligence on top of my portfolio?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, during the accumulation phase, I mean, as long as you invest, even if you're, you know, sticking with mostly index funds through all the way up until, I don't know, age 50, you're going to do okay, right? If you're constantly hitting that 10 to 15% of pay, getting some employer match on top of that, save. But when you retire, you have to start drawing on the portfolio. So the math is different, right? Does that make sense? I mean, it's like, you know, we look at the stock market and, you know, I used to say positive 70% of the time, but over the last 50 years, it's actually been positive 74% of the time. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty good odds. However, the math is different when you're withdrawing money, right? When you're not adding money anymore and you're actually pulling money out, what you do when the market does have a decline, like 2022, where both bonds and stocks were down together, makes all the difference in the world. And so if you make a large mistake during a downturn in retirement when you have a limited resource, it's a problem. So distribution strategies are more important and require a little bit more maintenance than accumulation strategies.
To give an idea of what financial planning does for me, when I hit my 50s, one of my kids went into private school and I suddenly was spending more than my paycheck. So I started using some distribution strategies early, and I noticed it. You know, you notice the portfolio not growing as much as it used to. And you don't want that feeling in retirement, because that would feel really sickening, so to speak, when you're trying to juggle and you're like, I'm going to hit zero before I die. Let's talk about wealth management. Does it mean outperforming the market to you? Does it mean performing the market to you? What does it mean to you?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, the market's going to do what it's going to do. So I think that the idea when people say, oh, I'm going to hire an investment advisor, I'm going to outperform the market, doesn't necessarily, that's not really necessarily the case, right? Because if you look at some of the statistics out there, when it comes to large cap, it's hard for large cap managers to outperform the S&P 500, although the S&P 500 is a little wacky right now. So we can talk about that in a moment. But what wealth management means is I'm trying to make my wealth last longer than me. And so the idea that you create a portfolio that has a couple of different targets in it, right? I want to make sure that I've created a portfolio that's going to meet my return requirements that I need to be able to have a successful retirement, have some things in there like hedges against inflation, have some things in there like stable, dependable income when you know you need to make withdrawals, like a laddered bond portfolio, but also designed so that you don't panic out or have a major problem if there is a downturn in the market like 2022. I keep pointing back to that because, you know, people have short-term, they have financial Alzheimer's, right? They forget some of the things that happen even in a short period of time. And so the idea of a wealth management portfolio is always maintaining. Here's the target. We're maintaining that. We're creating a distribution strategy, how much you can pull from dividends and interest. When is it okay to sell principal and replenish your cash? And then really when, you know, if you're investing in the market. So when you're keeping up with the market and the different indexes, whether it's large cap, small cap, mid cap, international, if you're keeping up with those indexes, net of fees in the good years, and then outperforming in the down years by rebalancing proper withdrawal strategies, then you're way ahead of the game. Essentially, the situation can pay for itself, even though you're paying fees. If you're keeping up with the indexes, net of fees, you're getting some outperformance on the downside, some rebalancing on both the downside and the upside, you're winning.
Like that. You talked about the bond market and structuring laddered bonds. I want to talk a little bit about how the bond market had a bad couple of years. And you focus on corrections a lot, Chad. You focus on bear markets. You focus on crashes. I hear it. You may not think that you do, but you do, because I think you do it because success as an investor comes from what you do during the bad times. How are you approaching the bond market these days? Because it's part of someone's income strategy in retirement.
Yeah, I mean, right now the bond market's more attractive than it's been since 2006. However, we are seeing these sticky signs of inflation. So you never know when we could enter kind of, I don't really see a stagflation environment, but I mean, there's a little bit of signs of it, right? And that was like the 80s where we had slow growth, but continued rising inflation, right? It's hard to tell what it is now because we had supply chain issues and then kind of overstocking and then, you know, the government funding with the PPP loans and everything else. But a good way to say, okay, I'm retired, I need some dependable income. But what happens if rates go up? When rates go up, people look in their 401ks and they see their bond funds fall in value. I mean, if we're looking at the Barclays or the Bloomberg Aggregate Bond Index, you know, so far for the year, Rob, it's down about 2.6% after income. The year, because interest rates have continued to, well, that's about down after, actually after day, about 1.92%. And as if interest rates go up, you know, the bonds that you own look like they fall in value. And really that doesn't matter unless you're going to sell your bond. But what happens in a bond fund, a very heavily owned retail bond fund, is if rates really continue to go up, you could see retail investors start to sell, and that could force the bond fund manager to sell bonds at a loss that they would otherwise would have just held to maturity for $100. And so by taking, if you have enough wealth where you can take $250,000 or more out and do a laddered bond portfolio, like in an IRA, I like 1 to 10 year corporates, where every year you have 1/10 of your portfolio coming to due that you can either spend, invest in a new 10-year bond, or move it over to stocks if there's a correction, that can help shelter from increasing rates. So you have that dependable income and you're not subject to just the bond fund decline when interest rates go up. I mean, after the break, we'll talk about what the expectations were for 2024 and what's actually happened, right? In terms of everybody thought rates were going to go down and they haven't yet.
Right. Bear markets, bond markets, bull markets. There's a lot talking about it. CFP Chad Burton and having a financial planner can help you structure diversification so that it doesn't come volatile and make you upset at retirement. You can learn about our event coming up May 9th, 6:30 to 8:30, wealth preservation retirement planning, by going to CFP Chad Burton's website, chadburton.com or robblackshow.com.
Maybe you feel like you're in good shape for retirement, but have you really taken everything into account? Find out how you're really doing at a wealth preservation and retirement planning event May 9th in Palo Alto, hosted by Rob Black and CFP Chad Burton of EP Wealth Advisors. Rob will provide timely commentary, and Chad will share specific strategies for taxes, income, long-term care, safe money, retirement products, alternative investments, estate protection goals, and more. If you have at least $500,000 in investable assets and want to retire better, pass on your estate, and minimize taxes, this event is for you. Find out if you're on the right track at this free wealth preservation and retirement planning event. That's Thursday evening, May 9th, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Elks Lodge in Palo Alto. Space is limited, so sign up today at robblackshow.com. That's robblackshow.com.
Sometimes I get a little excited. I don't get a proper plug in. This Thursday, there's an event coming up, 6:30 to 8:30, Palo Alto, the Palo Alto Elks Lodge. It's a great location. It's the go-to for me and Chad. It's easy to get to from San Jose, from San Francisco, from the East Bay. Great parking. You don't get jacked on parking prices or anything like that. nice location, and you get to see a lot of pictures of the old Elks Lodge. And I don't know, Chad, you ever, before I get there, Chad, Wealth Preservation Retirement Planning, this Thursday, 6:30 to 8:30, we have a few seats remaining. You can sign up at Rob Black's show or chadburton.com. Tax efficiency, retirement costs, portfolio transition, investment accounts, Social Security. There's a lot of controversy on when to take Social Security, early, later. It depends. And Chad can help give you the answers on that, estate protection, how to set it up correctly. Chad, you ever join a company or a group like a Elks Lodge or a Kiwanis, or are you so service oriented, or are you too young for that at this point in time as far as business community?
It's so interesting that you're talking about, because I was thinking about these memories over the weekend, because my second, Eli, is going to be interning for our planning department starting in May. And so I still remember, you know, 31 years ago in August when I started, we would have my grandfather and I would have lunch at a various Elks club at least once a week, you know, depending on where we were traveling around Portland, Oregon area to meet with clients. There, you know, an Elks Lodge or a Moose Lodge, a Lions Club, whatever they were, everybody was in clubs. And you'd go into these places and there's always a couple people at the bar drinking it, you know, at noon smoking, and we'd have our French dip sandwiches. And my grandfather was part of a ton of different clubs. He used to even take, for the Lions Club, he would make runs from the airport to the hospital when a set of eyes would come in for, I think it was cornea implants.
That's right.
He was in a lot of clubs. And I think that socially that was huge. And then today it's a little more difficult. Everybody seems to be so busy at work, they just have enough time to live life after that. So the Elks clubs that I remembered, I just remember the first time you and I said, okay, we're going to do a meeting at the Elks club. And in my head, I'm thinking smoky bar, you know, this is going to be interesting. And then I showed up at the Palo Alto Elks club and I'm like, oh wow, this is way different. It's a really nice facility. But, so I think maybe when Eli starts, I'll find an Elks lodge to take him to lunch, get him a French dip, really get nostalgic on 30 years ago.
That's a pretty cool story. And A, it tells you me about your relationship with your grandfather, but the fact that your grandfather was able to do business networking. And I think that's something I regret. I wish I would have done more, Chad. But let's get back to talking about the event Thursday. Coming up 6:30 to 8:30, people can go to your website, chadburton.com. As we discussed recently, if people want to upload their portfolios through a secure online link, they can with you, and you can talk to them about their portfolios. You can talk to them about where they are at their age. Are they ready for financial planning or not? But also this live event is a good example of you know, learning more about what you need and what you don't need. And you can do it by signing up at chadburton.com. Chad, we're talking about bond markets and how CFPs, their job is not necessarily to beat the market, but maybe to be the market and to manage downside risk. I like how you've said that throughout the years. Did we need to hit anything else on the bond market, or were you wrapped up?
No, I think in terms of, okay, how do you structure the bond market? Because don't get me wrong, I like a mix of individual bonds and funds. Okay. So when somebody has, you know, probably 400,000 or more in bonds, where you can, that's when you can effectively take a good chunk of it, let's say 250, and put it in what we call core bond portfolio ladder of individual bonds. So like in an IRA, if you've got a chunk in bonds, you could take a chunk of it and usually we separate it in a different account. And if it's $250,000 right now, I like the 1 to 10 year corporates, like I said. So you're getting income north of 5%, but you also have 1/10 of your portfolio coming due every single year because you have one bond maturing every year for 10 years. So that's dependable income that you can count on from investing in bonds for companies that are A rated or above. And then you can blend in some more actively managed bond funds and what we call strategic bond funds around that. And so you've got the chance for dependable income, but you also have a chance for higher total return by using some of the bond funds. The individual bonds, since you know you have a maturity, kind of shelters you from, okay, if everybody's wrong and rates continue to go up and the Fed doesn't have raise had lower interest rates, they end up having to raise it because of inflation, then you know you have that dependable income from those annually maturing bonds. Okay. In a taxable account, like if you're in California and you're doing this with money in a taxable account, right now, I kind of like the, you know, 5 to 15 year California munis, where you do a portfolio of bonds that start maturing every year, in year 3 all the way up to the year 15. And it's a good way to have dependable income. So if interest rates go up, you know those bonds are still going to mature at $100, right? And it doesn't matter what the price is on paper right now, because that's only if you sell the bond early. At the same time, if interest rates do start to drop, Rob, and you see your bonds go up in value on paper, you could actually sell them early for a capital gain and reinvest the proceeds somewhere else. So it kind of gives you flexibility in both directions.
I like that. When you talked about structuring a bond ladder for income,
mm-hmm.
What percentage of your clients would you say can do it on their dividends or alone, or do it on their bonds alone, or the income in the financial plan? You have to be pretty creative, I would think, or pretty open-minded. You can't say one or the other, or just pure distributions. What are your thoughts on, is there a balance in your head that you want? Have you seen one totally skew to the right and one totally skew to the left?
In terms of very aggressive or very conservative?
Yeah. And again, my dream when I was younger was to have 100% of my income in retirement come from dividends, and then mm-hmm. give all those stocks to my kids when I die. Silly and simple, but that's what the dream was.
Yeah. And and that's totally fine. So if you've got to think about the inflation factor though, right? Because if you're 60 years old and you retire and currently the dividends from your stocks are just enough, well, you better have what's called dividend achievers, or stocks that have a history of raising their dividends each year by at least the rate of inflation, so your income can stay up with it. And that's totally fine as long as you're willing to take extra volatility. Because there's going to be a lot more volatility in a stock portfolio than a 60 stock, 40 bond portfolio. But those that get to the point that they're that wealthy, they have the choice to be extra aggressive or even more conservative.
Coming up, we're going to talk about which accounts to draw from. First, you can sign up for the event Thursday, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Elks Lodge in Palo Alto, chadburton.com, robblackshow.com.
This interview featured on The Rob Black Show is brought to you by EP Wealth. Learn more at robblack.com.
Some interesting notes here. We got kind of a Goldilocks job report on Friday. There's now a 75% chance of a rate cut in September. I don't necessarily believe those numbers. They change with the data, but Wall Street's interpreting it potentially in the short term as a positive. Also of note, Apple's going to release some new iPads tomorrow. I remember 10 years ago when that would have moved the market. Not so much these days. The iPad was supposed to replace the desktop, but it turns out that the iPhone did a lot of the functions that the desktop does now. Sometimes things don't work out like you want them to. And Americans, Chad, bought $1.6 billion worth of ramen noodles last month, up 72% since 2000. Ramen noodles are famous for you can get 5 for a dollar. Any thoughts on the ramen index as far as a reflection on the stock market?
Just college flashbacks, right? We are seeing signs of, you know, some tough times for some of the consumer discretionary stocks, and the jobs report is interesting. But just seeing what's going on with, the tech sector and jobs, especially some of the high paying jobs that still haven't been replaced, right? People were able to go back to work if they did get laid off at the Microsoft and Amazon and other places, but they had to go back to work at much lower pay.
Yep.
Because a lot of tech companies overhired, overpaid, and then, you know, they're correcting that at this point.
Facebook's correcting quickly and Google's correcting slowly. Amazon's correcting slowly. It's interesting how different companies are, because the stock seems to get rewarded when you lay off people.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you hear the term layoffs. You know, oh, the market's it's going to be a tough time. Well, that's actually can be better for profits, but socially can be a little rough when you have the unemployment rates go up. But there's an issue of healthy competition. I mean, we even saw it in our industry when CFPs were jumping around every year or two. It seemed just for more and more promises, and then a lot of companies are now on a hiring freeze. And we would tell that to people. I mean, if you're the type that there's that thought for people that are especially under 30, like two and out, like if you don't get promoted or increased in salary in 2 years, you're gone. So that's why you see resumes that are constantly in a new job every 2 years or so, and that's fine during a a bull market, but you also have to realize that during a downturn or any kind of a recession, you're the new person, you're going to be the first to go. And you might be unemployed for a little bit longer. So if you're going to take that route of the two and out, well, you better have a much higher emergency reserve saved up in order to weather the storm.
So we got a big event Thursday night, 6:30 to 8:30. We've already got a sign up from today. We're looking for a couple more. People can sign up at robblackshow.com or chadburton.com. Scroll down half the page on Chad. For me, you can sign up under the word events. But for Chad, just scroll down about half the page. At the event, you're going to hit big topic issues. Again, Social Security, taxes, tax efficiency, a little AI in your portfolio of getting everything to work together, including your estate plan, including your trust, including, like I said, taxes. I think that's a big one. Alternative income streams. Taxes on income streams are all different. Crazy. It's a lot to juggle. How do you determine, Chad, which accounts to draw from first? Because again, like I said, I'm looking for dividends. Another one of your prospects or clients might be looking for bond interest, bond yields. We're all very, very different. So what's the formula? What's the angle for you?
So here's the thing is first you have to do a very careful financial plan which is with linear cash flow projections, where you have a certain amount of inflation on all of your expenses, right? Normal inflation on regular expenses, 5 to 6% on healthcare costs, and then a rate of return. You know, typically you're going to want to use a rate of return of 6% or slightly less just to be safe. And you run that projection out over the long term and see, are you leaving your kids a lot of assets, or do you barely have enough in retirement? That's step number one. Step number two is in that linear cash flow projection, it should show you and estimate how much your required minimum distributions are going to be at age either 73 or, if you're a little younger, age 75.
Can I look that up online? Because I've never seen that statement.
That statement? Well,
yeah, I've never, I'd like to see an example of that statement, because to me, that's kind of weird.
Well, so first of all, you have to take your IRAs and 401ks, which is a little bit more difficult while you're working, right? Because you have to assume a certain rate of return, but you're also making contributions to it.
Okay.
Or if you're retired now, you just take a certain rate of return and say, if I don't touch my IRAs or 401ks, how much are they likely going to be worth when I'm 73? And then how much do you have to take out? And so the table is, in terms of how much you have to take out, is at irs.gov. And so you take the year end value and divide it by the factor for your age. And so when you're running this projection, then you can clearly see this is what all of a sudden they have to take out of their IRAs and 401ks and 403bs. And then another column that shows this is what that does to your tax bracket. Should we fight that tax problem now and start withdrawing early? And there's two strategies. If you're, you know, not going to have a lot left for retirement when you're 100 years old, then you're probably pulling a little bit out of that year each year to spend. Right, you're blending your capital gains bracket and your ordinary income bracket to spend. But if you're going to be leaving a lot of assets to your kids, the best assets to leave to your kids are, number one, a Roth IRA, because they'll be able to roll it into an inherited Roth IRA and have another 10 years of tax-free growth, which could mean essentially what you leave them could double in value again. Mm-hmm. Or real estate and stocks that are not in retirement accounts, because they get a step up in basis. You've got to kind of look at that situation and say, okay, I'm leaving a ton of assets to the kids, so it's important that my whole family pays the least amount of taxes to the government as possible. So you have to kind of think about, all right, by the time people typically inherit money, they're at their highest earnings ever, right? Your parents typically pass when you're in your 50s and 60s. That's usually when you're at the height of your career and the highest taxes ever. So if people leave IRAs and annuities to their children, and the kids have to pay taxes over, say, 5 to 10 years, then it ends up being the IRS and the government gets more in tax revenue than if you would have just done it on your own. So it becomes an issue of, what's the financial plan look like? Do you have just enough to retire, or are you leaving a lot of assets to your kids? And then that drives the withdrawal strategy.
With that out there, how concerned are you? Like, California always tinkers with the real estate law, where if you give your kids a house in your death, your trust, mm-hmm. that if they don't live in it, they may get taxed. Whereas they do live in it, it's all kosher. But we don't know where our kids are going to live or want to live when they're 20 years from now, or whenever I die 10 years from now. Thoughts on how laws change and how to approach that? Because I see people that have 10 rental properties. And I'm like, you don't know what the real estate laws are going to be. And I see people that don't have any real estate. And like, that could have been a tax efficient asset to pass on to your kid.
Well, yeah. And the problem is that a lot of homes in the Bay Area, I think we talked about this last week, are, you know, the cash flow doesn't look that great because the rents haven't stayed up with the values. And then the idea that once your kids inherit that rental property, now they're not going to get the same property tax basis. They're going to have a huge increase in property taxes, which makes that rental look even more unattractive. So you'll probably see a lot of those be sold when mom or dad passes away, because and if you own the, you know, if you're married, you own property jointly in California, it's a step up in basis at the first death. So that gives the survivor or the kids the opportunity to sell that property without paying any capital gains. And if you're like, okay, I've got this rental I don't want anymore, my kids aren't going to have it, especially when once the property taxes are increased, then that's when you can look for a 1031 exchange and sell that property and move it without paying taxes into something else. That's a whole show, though.
That's a whole show.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah. We promise that one will come around. I think we hit that one pretty good. Do we have time to hit the actual process of a Roth conversion? Do you want to talk about that? Because I think people hear a lot about it, but they don't know about how to implement that strategy. I don't, for sure.
Well, now is a really good time to look at it because most people just got their tax return completed. So it's a good time. All of that data is fresh in your mind. So the idea of looking at your tax return and being aware of several numbers, things like your taxable income, your adjusted gross income, your modified adjusted gross income. Those are all very important numbers that drive decisions in retirement. For example, your modified adjusted gross income is your taxable income, plus you have to add back in things like your tax-free bond income. That number drives things like how much do you pay in Medicare Part B versus your neighbor. Going back to the idea of the Roth conversion, we typically do this in November for clients, because by November, you know what your tax situation is. Your tax situation is your income from Social Security, IRAs, pensions, but it can also be from dividends and interest and capital gains that happen in your taxable accounts or with real estate. And so by November, we have a pretty good idea what's going to happen for the year. Now, Robin, let's say that you're a married couple filing jointly, and at the end of the year, you take all of your income minus either your standard deduction or your itemized deductions. Let's say your income, your taxable income is $150,000. So a married couple filing jointly, you're solidly in the 22% tax bracket. But the 22% tax bracket goes all the way up to $201,000. And so for that married couple filing jointly, if you know they're always going to have about that much income, well, you should be maxing out that 22% bracket. You've got $50,000 left at it. So if in that bracket, so you open a Roth IRA and then you fill out a conversion form and move $50,000 from your regular IRA to the Roth IRA. You pay the taxes on it now in exchange for tax-free growth forever. That also helps reduce your required minimum distributions. So that's a bit of the process. It's year-end tax planning and then just getting it done.
You can sign up for the event. I don't think these strategies are easy to do on your own, and that's why we show you what CFPs do, but you should be aware of the ideas. Retirement Planning and Wealth Preservation, Palo Alto, Elks Lodge, 6:30 to 8:30, May 9th, Thursday, May 9th. Sign up under chadburton.com, chadburton.com, middle of the page, or robblackshow.com.
Don't want to work forever? Check out the Retirement Planning Guide on robblack.com. That's robblack.com, powered by EP Wealth.
So not only do I get to talk to CFP Chad Burton on air today, every time I do, it makes me one bit smarter when it comes to financial planning, but I get to see him Thursday evening, 6:30 to 8:30. It's something I always enjoy doing. He always says afterwards, let's go out and have a friendly cocktail or drink. And I'm like, I got to work the next morning because we work different schedules. But it's always nice to see him. He's going to be at the financial planning event, Wealth Preservation Retirement Planning in Palo Alto, Elks Lodge, Palo Alto, 6:30 to 8:30. I'll be there around 4 in the afternoon. He'll be there right before the show starts. But we'll bring extra CFPs to help look at your portfolio, to talk to you about your portfolio, to talk to you about retirement, to ask, answer questions that you want. You can sign up for the event at chadburton.com or robblackshow.com. Chad, we were talking about the Roth conversion in the last segment, and you wanted to hit one more topic on it. Thoughts?
Well, yeah, so typically we're looking at this, you know, for everybody in November, for those clients that we determine, okay, it is a good idea for you to make small IRA to Roth conversions every year as part of your financial plan or your estate plan in terms of leaving money for kids. The other time when you accelerate that is during a really good market correction, right? Typically, when you're investing your money, you're going to have your IRAs are going to be your more conservative accounts, but you typically want your Roths to be a bit more aggressive because they're either going to be left to your kids or one of the last buckets you draw from. So when you do have a significant market correction, you say, okay, now is a good time to do this because I'm going to say either pick a specific fund or ETF to convert. So like if you have a market correction, you see small cap growth is down and you don't want to sell it, you could transfer shares. You could do a conversion in kind where you transfer shares of your favorite fund or stock from your IRA to your Roth using a conversion form. And that way you still hold the same position. Now you're going to pay taxes on that. So you're typically, most of the time, people are paying the taxes out of their cash that they have on the sidelines. When you do an IRA to Roth conversion, it may make sense to do some withholding on that depending on what your overall tax situation is. But so going back to the idea, when you're looking at the IRA to Roth conversions, most of the time we're doing it around November when we know what the tax situation is, but we could accelerate that to estimate the tax situation to the best of our ability, but take advantage of any market correction.
That's a lot going on. Do you think the average person can do that, Chad?
No, I think the average person doesn't want to do that. I mean, do you want to spend your retirement days looking at tax brackets and using tax projection software and looking at investments? Or do you want to say, I'm done working, I'm going to go play golf, pickleball, swim, bike, travel, play with my grandkids, whatever it may be?
It's interesting that you say that, because this weekend I started doing the teeter-totter in my head where I'm going to get too old to enjoy retirement fast versus do it now and feel like, oh, it's getting out of control. There's a lot of psychology when it comes to retirement and when to take and when not to take. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, and again, if you want to talk Roth strategies, contact CFP Chad Burton. You can find him at chadburton.com, but it's something we talk more detail about at the event Thursday night, 6:30 to 8:30. One of the things I wanted to talk to you quickly about was Berkshire Hathaway had the annual shareholders meeting. Obviously, it's an interesting stock. It doesn't pay a dividend. It's got a lot of cash on hand, $182 billion. Apple is a big position in it, which affects the Bay Area for sure. But one of the things he said, he said, first and foremost, he sounds really old, and I'm concerned because he's probably the best mentor for all of us out there on the value of investing over time. But also he said something that was really interesting that he said he hopes to be there next year, but he's not sure he will, that he thinks that humanity might one day regret letting the genie out of the bottle in the AI bottle, because he saw a AI fake of him that he thinks would have convinced his kids to sell the stock. And he said AI scamming is going to be the biggest growth industry of all time. Any thoughts on Warren Buffett? Anything specific? Anything big picture?
Well, there's one I'll send you that my kids and I were passing around over the weekend. It was a fake video of Jerome Powell heading out on stage and acting like, you know, he's how hyped up. And it was like, this is what Jerome Powell is going to be like when he announces his first rate cut. And it was essentially Jerome Powell's body instead of Little Yachty's body, which is a rapper, just jumping out on stage all hyped up. But it looked fairly realistic. And then I've seen one with Ackerman, the hedge fund manager, fake pitching an AI trading strategy. Like this, I think that social media is going to have to be held liable for allowing this stuff on, because I keep seeing them over and over again, and it's obviously a fake. So yeah, there's a huge problem here, and I'm really, really concerned about our senior citizens that are on Facebook and what they see, because we already have a problem of people thinking that, oh, I saw this on Facebook, it's news. No, well, no, it's not. So yeah, it's a problem, Rob. I'm definitely concerned about that.
As a financial planner, how involved are you with prospects or clients that involve that like, make sure you talk to me before you open an investment account, or make sure you talk to me before you wire something. I know there's trip wires and safety issues that EP Wealth puts into place if there's anything unusual, but how personal do you get with prospects or clients?
Well, one of the first things too is like when people talk about their computer, I mean, getting a new up-to-date computer is so key. You know, everything's online. And if I'm visiting a client at their house and I see all the passwords written down on a notepad next to their computer, I mean, you know, you have problems. So having a good password keeper, up-to-date computer, virus software, it's all really important. That's why we've done client events that were geared towards cybersecurity. It's very, very important.
It's interesting that you say that, because I saw a shredding company recently. I was at the dump and they also will shred your documents. And I'm like, I don't really need to shred my documents because everything's online. I don't have documents anymore. And do you remember when you used to do seminars and you would talk about getting like a mailbox that was made of steel so people couldn't steal from it?
Yep.
Things have changed a lot in 10, 20 years.
That's for sure. Even in the last couple of years. And with AI, that's why cybersecurity companies are so popular. Boy, we'll have to hit tomorrow, because I really wanted to talk about the S&P 500 and then, you know, 80% being in tech. But one of the top 10 companies that's not tech is Berkshire, which owns a ton of Apple. So I think people are so much less diversified today than they've ever been.
Right. And more exposed to growth. So it works both ways. Big event coming up Thursday, May 9th. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about it again. But right now, let's plug it. Wealth Preservation Retirement Planning. Thursday, May 9th, 6:30 to 8:30 in Palo Alto at the Elks Lodge. Chad has a great website with lots of content, but also a place to sign up at chadburton.com or robblackshow.com. Good day.
Maybe you feel like you're in good shape for retirement, but have you really taken everything into account? Find out how you're really doing at a wealth preservation and retirement planning event May 9th in Palo Alto, hosted by Rob Black and CFP Chad Burton of EP Wealth Advisors. Rob will provide timely commentary, and Chad will share specific strategies for taxes, income, long-term care, safe money, retirement products, alternative investments, estate protection goals, and more. If you have at least $500,000 in investable assets and want to retire better, pass on your estate, and minimize taxes, this event is for you. Find out if you're on the right track at this free wealth preservation and retirement planning event. That's Thursday evening, May 9th, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Elks Lodge in Palo Alto. Space is limited, so sign up today at robblackshow.com. That's robblackshow.com.